Nature's bounty is greatly in evidence this time of year, and so are forced smiles from people accepting just one more zucchini from neighbors who had a good year in the garden. Hey, it's food. Having a lot of it is a good thing, really. It's just trying to figure out what to do with all the zucchini and tomatoes and corn and apples and pears that could be a bit of a challenge. Our next guest has a few ideas, and from a couple of different levels of expertise, Dee Davis Guy is a master gardener and a master food preserver, and we just learned a master recycler as well, and a graduate of Citizens Fire Academy. We'll concentrate mostly on the gardener and food preserver part. And thank her for joining us here in the Jefferson Exchange. Dee, good to have you here.
Thank you, Jeff. Thanks for having me.
Tell us about what got you interested enough. Did the master food preserver come after the master gardener thing?
Actually, I had been a master gardener for a few years before I got into the master food preserver program. I had been preserving food on my own for several years. I'd learned from my mother and grandmother. And I thought I already knew everything, so I didn't need to take that program. And one of my best friends who had taken the Master Gardener program with me talked me into it and when she was going through it. And I found out that I didn't know nearly what I thought I knew because so many things have changed technology-wise and safety-wise between the time my mother's mother and grandmother taught her to cook and can, and she, you know, she taught me, and today's standards. Lots of things have changed, and we have to keep abreast, and OSU Extension offers these classes at a real reasonable cost, and they're all science-based, technology-based, research-based, safety-conscious efforts. So while I was in this class with my friend, we sat there and looked at each other a lot and said, I don't know why I haven't killed my family because I've been doing things wrong for so long. So,
all right. You mentioned the word safety enough times now. I figured we'd go there first anyway. So I mean, is it if you make a few mistakes, is it easy to kill people by or at least getting them very sick by not preserving things properly?
It really can be. It absolutely can be. Some of the things that we were taught, at least I was taught when I was young, and a lot of people still do, is water bath canning their green beans. That is no longer safe to do. It was never safe to do, but there are so many more things in our environment now that can get into the green beans. They have to be pressure canned to be safe. We have a lot of E. coli just in our environment that creeps into the canning process, and if we're not real careful and if we're not real sure what we're doing, it can contaminate our food supply. And if there are four main food groups of people that are real susceptible mm-hmm. to food poisoning and to getting very ill from this kind of thing, and that's young children, older people, pregnant women, and people with any kind of a compromised immune system. So that could be anything from chemotherapy to lupus, or if you have a cold right now, you have a compromised immune system and you eat something that isn't quite right, it can really set off a really bad chain of events.
I think of the things that have shown up with E. coli contaminations in recent years, including things like spinach, which we didn't used to think was part of that. Is this the sort of thing you're referring to, where
exactly.
E. coli is showing up in lots of other places?
Exactly.
So it sounds like there's a whole realm of things we pull in from farm or garden that we're now preserving differently?
Correct. And also our tomatoes have changed themselves because back when our grandparents were canning tomatoes and our parents were canning tomatoes, they were a high-acid food. But because the public's taste have changed over the years, OSU and other places have hybridized tomatoes and made them sweeter. So we have a tomato now that more suits the public's tastes, but isn't as safe to can because it's a lower acid food. So tomato is no longer really considered a high acid food. So when it is preserved, especially when it's canned, has to be acidified. We have to add lemon juice to the tomatoes to acidify it, or it has to be pressure canned.
All right, so the acidification is to make it more difficult for bacteria to live in there?
It is.
All right, so lots to talk about with tomatoes in particular. We're talking to Dee Davis Guy, who's a master gardener and a master food preserver. Questions and comments are more than welcome on the Jefferson Exchange, and maybe some stories of your own about things that have gone really well in preserving food or not so really well. We'll take either kind of story. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Here's Tammy in Gold Hill. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Dee.
Hi, Dee. I wanted to find out about peeling tomatoes and whether it's really necessary when canning salsa. Can I keep the peels in there?
You absolutely can. The peels do not hurt the salsa one bit. Let's make sure that you're using an approved recipe or a nice safe recipe out of the Ball canning book or the Ball. They have a website. Also, OSU Extension has a website linked right to OSU where they've got a lot of really great safe recipes. But yeah, the tomato skins just add more fiber and nutrition. That's where most of the tomato's nutrition is right under the skin. So often when we pull that skin off, we lose some nutritional value. So yeah, you can go ahead and can that salsa with it. In fact, if you were making a sauce or paste or any other kind of product, I always take my tomatoes, put them through my blender, and seeds, skins, and all go right into it. It's kind of liquefied or pulped, so nobody notices that there are seeds and skins in there. But that's a little more fiber and a little more nutrition to sneak into my family's diet.
Tammy, what have you been doing with tomatoes up until now?
Well, I actually did do salsa, but the recipe asked for it to be the tomatoes to be blanched first and then cut up. But it sure was messy, and I thought it would be much easier if I kept the skins on. I didn't know if they would separate during the canning process or if it would just come out like paste Bacanti sauce.
Right. Well, it's going to come out like your own Bacanti sauce or your own salsa, so it'll be a little different because paste has their own recipes. But you do not need to blanch and take the skins off of those. You can cut those up raw and put those into whatever salsa that you're using.
All right, so there are some differences here in trying to preserve things in some sort of prepared way. And when we talk about canning, that there's some level of preparation there. Versus, for example, I didn't know what to do with the apples when they came off my tree last year. So I still have one last bag of, like, frozen apples that I ran through the corer and split them up into 8 segments each. I haven't killed myself. Was there a danger I could?
Oh, no. You can freeze apples, and those are nice and safe. Anything in the freezer is pretty well protected from any kind of, as long as it hasn't thawed and refrozen or anything like that, it's pretty safe to eat. But another thing that you might want to try is dehydrating them. Run them through the same kind of process with the peeler corer and lay them out on a tray either in a dehydrator or you can do it in your oven at a very low level. I have taken apple slices and sprinkled cinnamon on them, and it's nutmeg, you know, kind of an apple, like a pie spice blend on them, and it is like eating an apple pie. They're just absolutely delicious. I shipped them overseas when my son was in Afghanistan, and he didn't even really get any because his other soldier friends would see the box from Thomas's mom, and they were like, open that. That's going to be good stuff. So,
all right, that was about the apples part. I want to come back to the tomatoes thing because I'd never heard that before about throwing everything into the blender. Last year I tried the Foley food mill for the first time and did end up with a few seeds left over still. So, but just in the blender is a good way for you to just prepare tomatoes?
Yeah, if you have a powerful, I have a Vitamix, which is, you know, a really good strong blender, but there are others out there. And I just throw everything in there. See, wash them up really well. Seeds, skins, the whole thing, they blend up into a very nice sauce that you can't even tell that there were seeds and skins in there.
And is this a way to make salsa, too, or would you prefer a little more cutting and chopping for a salsa
Most
preparation?
Most people's salsa recipes are a chunkier recipe. So I wouldn't like that for myself. It's more of a spaghetti sauce and type of thing, just general tomato sauce. But it could be done that way. But I don't know anybody who wants to eat a salsa that is just soupy.
Right. In fact, one of the neighbors who, and I can totally relate on the whole zucchini story. It's been, you know, it's great. People just have so much zucchini, but we got zucchini, corn, tomatoes, all kinds of stuff from one of the neighbors, even some cucumber, excuse me. But when I was asking about the tomatoes, I said, I don't know if I can use them this fast because only one of us in the house eats tomatoes. And he said, oh, you can just quarter them and throw them in the freezer. So does that work for tomatoes as well?
It does.
Pretty much everything in the freezer, you say, is
pretty much everything in the freezer. What I would do with them, and I have done in the past, is cut them up. They could be quartered. They could be sliced any way that you kind of like to use it. And freeze them on a baking tray in the freezer, and then when they're nice and solid, then you scoop them up and put them into a Ziploc bag. That way they won't stick together when they're frozen.
Ah, okay. So you don't want to freeze them separately and then collect them together. Okay, good point. More calls here, and we can take more of these as well for D. Davis Guy, Master Food Preserver, Master Gardener, 800-838-3760 by phone, by email jx@jeffnet.org. Here's John in Grants Pass. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Hi. I was always fortunate that Mom and my wife have canned all sorts of stuff and jams and jellies. But my question is, what's kind of the most common? Maybe it is tomatoes.
The most common preserved food? I would think that would depend on what you have in your garden. A lot of people make jams, lots and lots, which they're very easy to make and don't require a whole lot of extra equipment. But tomatoes are right up there because you can do so much with them later on in the year. You know, you can either can them whole, you can quarter them, you can crush them, you can do all sorts of things with just tomatoes and then make your soups or whatever you like later on in the year.
Jamie in Medford asks about if you have an excess of small tomatoes, like grape tomatoes, can you store them by freezing them like grapes, or would you have to blanch them first? It sounds like we've answered this one already. You can pretty much freeze
them.
Yeah,
you can just freeze those.
And much loss in the taste or the texture of something like a tomato if you stick it in the freezer?
The texture is going to be completely different because after you've frozen them, you're not going to want to eat it like you would a fresh tomato. But you can sure cook with them afterwards.
Okay, so more of a cooking kind of thing for those tomatoes. Now, I hadn't asked about the preparation of another raw tomato dish, which would be gazpacho. Do you have much expertise there?
I really don't, but that, you know, anything out of your garden is going to make a much superior product than anything that you're going to buy. If you have a good recipe for that you like, and now is the time to do that sort of thing. And a gazpacho is a soup-based thing, and it has some acid to it. So you could even make batches up and put them in Ziploc bags and freeze those for later in the winter or next spring and just have them on hand.
Are people often surprised, Dee, by just how much food they can grow with not a great deal of effort in the garden? I mean, they got to put a little work up front, but then, boy, it seems like once you get stuff started, it goes.
It really does. I have a very small garden area. And I'm not, the master gardeners always recommend that you rotate crops and you don't plant the same thing in the same spot every year. But I don't have any choice, so I rotate soil instead. And I bring in bales of hay and bagged leaves from the leaf pickups and dump them in my garden spot. And I have kind of slacked off this year because I had other things going on. But a couple of years ago, I had 500 pounds of tomatoes out of my very small, like 10 by 10 garden spot.
500 what?
500 pounds of tomatoes.
Pounds of tomatoes.
And I also had peppers and cucumbers and basil, things like that in there with it.
Well, of course, you're a master gardener, though, so you're going to have a little more production out of your garden, wouldn't you think?
Anybody could do it, though. It wasn't a trade secret or anything. There was no magic under the moonlight going on there. There was just really good soil and, you know, being conscientious of watering consistently, not overwatering, not underwatering. Giving them what they needed, and they just went crazy. So,
is there something that he said for planning a garden with full knowledge of what your storage capacity is? In other words, knowing how much pantry and freezer space you have?
There's always that consideration that you have to make. But if you get into dehydrating, you can store a lot more food in a much smaller place. I've done that a lot with zucchini by slicing it very thin. I have kind of made chips out of them. We sprinkle different kind of flavorings on top of them, dehydrate it, and then we've eaten zucchini chips instead of potato chips. I have used zucchini. I've shred it in like quarter cup increments and dehydrate it in little mounds and then take those and package them separately. And when I'm baking, I get one of those out, rehydrate it, add it to the mixture, and it really enhances the flavor and texture of any kind of baked good.
Really? Cakes even?
Oh, yeah. It holds the moisture in really well. It makes it really wonderful. Cakes, pancakes, cookies, whatever you're making.
Does it bring a zucchini flavor with it, or is it just
it
all
does
about
not.
Just keeping the moisture in there?
Uh-huh.
All right. Well, since you mentioned dehydrating a couple times now, and for those of us who don't own dehydrators, what's a good set of procedures to use when you're trying to use your oven as a dehydrator?
If you don't own a dehydrator, you can use your oven at a really low setting, like 150, for a long period of time, or if you're going to be home and paying closer attention, maybe 250. You want to put it on a baking rack with, I suggest, a cooling tray on top of it. So like when you take your cookies out of the oven and you put them on the racks to cool, something like that on top of a cookie sheet with and put your vegetables or your fruits on that and then set them in the oven and they will dehydrate very nicely.
So the stuff you're trying to dehydrate on a rack and then above a cookie sheet.
On a rack so that they get,
so they get air
all
around
them.
Got it. Okay. Dee Davis Guy is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, Master Gardener and Master Food Preserver, trained at the Southern Oregon Research and Extension Center through Oregon State University. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about gardening techniques and harvest techniques at this time of year, and then all that preservation stuff that goes with trying to make use of, in her case, the 500 pounds of tomatoes she got out of roughly a 10 by 10 plot. Join us at 800-838-3760 with your questions and comments and stories by phone, or send an email to jx@jeffnet.org. So in the process of taking things out of your garden, let's talk about timing of picking. I was just asking you as you were, before you had a chance to get settled in, about when I should get the apples off the tree. I said, it looks like they're red enough. We should probably get them off now. And one of the neighbors said, oh, no, they're not ripe yet. I don't really know.
Well, they're ripe when they're ripe. You go out there and you pick an apple, you test the apple by eating the apple, and if it's ripe, then you pick them. It's really hard to say this year in particular because things have come on at a much different rate than we're kind of used to. My grapes were a month ahead of time.
Wow.
So, and I don't know if that's true for everybody's, but I know in my garden, that's how things happened. I know that my tomatoes didn't come on for a very long time. They were really late this year, so it's hard to say when anything is going to happen.
That is really strange. I know it was warm and dry fairly early in the year, and so a lot of things did start sooner than they normally would. But I'm a little surprised to hear that things are showing up late in the same season.
It was really crazy. I don't know what was going on with the tomatoes this year.
Okay, so tomatoes late. And then are there things about not just when you're picking stuff out of the garden, but times of day? Are those things relevant to when you pull some things out of the garden?
They always seem to be best first thing in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that is true or if that is just something we've always been just programmed to believe, because when you get it fresh first thing in the morning, then you put it, you have all day long to preserve it if you're going to, or start cooking with it or whatever you're going to do.
So now when we talk about the handling of stuff, once you've gotten it in and we've gone down a couple different avenues here about preservation, what are the I think there's a general conception that for the people who want to go a little further than I do, which is just chucking them in bags in the freezer, what you're going to do to preserve them. And the perception, I think, is that it's hot, it's steamy, it's equipment intensive and time consuming. So is that a fair assessment of food preservation?
Not necessarily. We have a lot of our mechanics now are a lot different than they were when I was a kid and my mom was canning in our house, and it was steamy and it was hot, and the pressure canner was a little scary because it could blow at any moment. The pressure canners are a lot safer now. The steam bath canners are still going to produce steam, or the water bath canners. We don't use steam bath canners, but the water bath canners are still going to produce steam. But we have to, we can accommodate that because most of us have air conditioning in our homes. And we can put that on our stove and vent it out. It's not as big a deal as it once was.
Another question here on the phone from Chris in Eureka. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Dee Davis Guy.
Hi. I just wanted to make a comment, just about how I harvest my raspberries and strawberries and how that relates to the last time I've watered.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, yeah, I definitely find that frequent, regular watering is useful. But it seems to me that the taste of the berries, if I pick, say, perhaps the evening after I've watered, or perhaps even the next day, they're not as sweet as if I wait, 2 or 3 days. And let the ground kind of dry up just a little bit, or it just tastes like they're a little more concentrated flavor. I just wondered if your guest has any input on that.
Good question about that. I wondered as well about the watering cycles late in the life of any fruit, really.
Well, we keep the water on our plants to not stress the plants. And the more water we give them, the more produce that they give us back. So I don't really know about them being sweeter, having been deprived a little bit of water. I know that when we have peppers, especially the hot peppers, if you stress those plants a little, they will get hotter.
Really?
So, yeah, that may apply to your strawberries and raspberries.
So back to canning and preservation. I mean, do you need a lot of equipment to get started, or can it be a little simpler than that?
It can be a little simpler than that. If you are just doing a basic water bath canning, you don't have to go buy a brand new water bath canner, big stainless steel thing. You can use any stock pot that you have that has a lid. You should have a rack in the bottom of it, which are fairly inexpensive to buy at Bi-Mart or anywhere that sells canning goods.
Which you can pull the stuff out without getting burned.
Just the flat surface on the bottom works, as long as you have something to keep the glass directly, it's not directly in contact with the bottom of your pan. But a towel would work as well. You need a lifter, a lid lifter, so that you're not reaching into boiling water. Then that's just a safety thing. And that's one other thing that I always recommend is this cute little thing that somebody started producing a few years ago called a bubbler. And it's a plastic thing about 6 inches long that has got stair steps on one end of it so that you can measure your headspace accurately. And I will never, ever, ever put a thing in a jar again without that little device with me.
Okay, all kinds of fun tips and tricks for both preserving food and for growing it in the first place. You're a wealth of information. We hope to have you back sometime.
Well, thank you so much.
Dee Davis Guy is a master gardener, master food preserver, master recycler, and a graduate of Citizens Fire Academy. Thanks again for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you. Have a great day.
You too.